Oh, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our first edition of the Weekend Wrap, coming to you on a Sunday night after round one of the AFL. Joining me tonight is Macca, as usual. How are you going, Macca?
Yeah, pretty good. As I was saying off air, a little bit depressed about how we went on Friday, but we'll recover.
We will recover, and Nikki is going to be with us momentarily. I just saw her pop in. There she is. How are you going, Nikki? Not quite ready yet.
Wait to see her little sign say she's connected. But
yeah.
No, I'm here now.
Ah, there you go. How you going, Nick?
This is the third time I'm trying to log into Discord and it finally worked.
Oh, well, third time lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put my headphones in a safe place.
Yeah, I hate those safe places. I got stuff all over the place in safe places that I've forgotten about.
Anyway, I'm delighted you're here, Nikki. I've got somebody to argue with.
Oh, and I'll tell you what, I've got something to argue about, and I think you'll actually be on my side, Nick, but I had a nice little to and fro with some stupid feminist from New Zealand today, so we'll get onto that later. But first of all, let's just round up the weekend results, and started on Thursday night with the running premiers Richmond getting over Carlton, a fairly spirited game. I think Carlton showed a few signs. Difficult to get a read on them, though, because I think Richmond were probably a little bit underdone like us, but they ended up getting up 121-95.
I also think, though, that what that game showed was that Carlton has figured out Richmond's game style. They couldn't go with them in the end, but they had. We know that Richmond had that new game style last year. Teams have figured them out, I reckon. That, you'll see.
Nikki, I think Nikki's onto something there. And also, Carlton Cripps is going to be a very, very good player this year. And Charlie Kernow, they've really got a good player there. So. And he's developed into a very good player and very, very quickly. But I think Nicky's right, though, about the game plan.
Doesn't Kerno remind you of Koutafidis? Oh,
doesn't he just?
Absolutely.
Oh, so
what
much.
What a champion he's going to be if he keeps fit. I hope he keeps fit because I love watching him play.
And can Carlton thank us because we gave them his brother?
Ed, yeah. Look, I'm not completely sold on Carlton. I think Richmond had to have been underdone like us. So maybe the scoreline flatters Carlton a little bit. But anyway, they put up a good first-up effort. And they are playing more attacking this year, which seems to be the next phase of Bolton's little rebuilding phase. They were quite defensive in the last couple. But considering they didn't have Doherty and Gibbs, not a bad showing from them.
Yeah, I think that they will be improvers. I don't think they'll make the eight. But I think there will be improvements.
They'll win a couple. On Saturday, we had the Saints and Brisbane getting together. I'd actually tipped Brisbane in this game, and they were in it for a long time, but St Kilda ended up overpowering them in the last 107-82 at Etihad.
Enjoyable game to watch.
Oh, yep. But Nicky, you stole my line. That's exactly what I was going to say. It was really good to watch. It was very open footy, and the ball was travelling end to end, but which it tends to do at Etihad, and there was some very good footy in it.
Yeah, and Charlie Cameron.
Charlie looked good. He kicked three off memory, and he was a live warrior and one of their better players. We'll miss Charlie.
Yes,
interestingly, they were actually playing him at full forward.
Yeah, he played the key for the full forward. You're right.
Well, flash in the pan, I think. I'm still happy with letting him go. Port overcame a fairly insipid Fremantle by 50 points on Saturday afternoon, 110-60. Fremantle just can't play in Adelaide, I don't think.
Well, they sort of try, but they don't do anything that is very systematic and they don't get much of a game going. The other thing too, though, I did think that Ebert really cut Fife out the game and in the process played a pretty good game himself. I don't think most people gave him Ebert a mention, but he was the main reason why Fife didn't go very well.
Well, yeah. Fife also didn't seem to like playing up forward at all either as well. It's... That's just the impression I got from the bits that I did see of that game. But I also like to make a comment of, okay, you were giving away three free tickets per person. Where were they all?
No, it wasn't three. Was it three? I think it was three. If you bought three tickets, you got a fourth one free. I think that's how it
was. Oh, was that what it was? Instead of one and giving away three?
I made up the rest of it. I said eventually it'd be one and get four and a round of beer if you paid it on Afterpay or something.
So if you force three to go, they could force another one into nothing.
That's right. Yeah, but it was a poor crowd, wasn't it?
It was a poor crowd.
Incredibly poor. And considering they were actually up against Frio,
yeah.
Where was that crowd? I will actually think the AFL will be very disappointed in seeing that crowd.
Yeah.
They will do the whole spruiking about how wonderful it is and they've had the most this first round one because they're anticipating 60,000 right now at the game with West Coast and Sydney. I think, though, that there might be a few questions sent Port's way from the AFL.
Being
positive for Port Adelaide, though, their recruiting did work pretty well. I thought their recruits were very good. Waters was very good. And Motlop played probably his good game for the year. I hope he's not going to do that all year, but he's usually inconsistent. But I thought he played very, very well. And the young Dom Barry, the Aboriginal lad who went back to the APY lands and has now returned, ex-Melbourne player, he's going to add a lot of pace to their side as well.
Right, Riley Bonner.
Laser foot.
Yeah.
What a kick, mate.
Yeah, I've got him on my dream team. I'm very happy about that. Anyway, let's push on because it's a Crow show, not Port show. What a stupid game Saturday.
Let's not talk about it. It was a shocker.
Gold Coast 55, North Melbourne 39. Are you serious? This is not the AFL, surely.
No, it was wet.
I know it was wet. I get that.
That was the edge of the hurricane that they were copping. And the AFL were actually considering calling that game off.
For people watching on TV, it'd be good to take it off. You know, it was a shock at a watch.
Yeah, it was pretty average. Collingwood continued on from last year. Gee. Buckley's not good. We had this discussion during the week on Tuesday night. If they keep playing like that, he doesn't get to round 10.
Surely they're preparing the news for him now.
Him and Eddie need to go on a holiday, I think, because it's just more of the same from Collingwood. They just look, they lack cohesion,
That was my summary of Collingwood. It's the same old, same old. Yeah. There's nothing different.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy
and
Mitchell.
And the big boy, the big Yankee, he's got to get some games for that nice elbow he gave out in the head.
Well, you would think so. It's not as if... it's not as if there's not precedent over the weekend, and we'll get to that.
I only saw bits of that game, and every bit I did kind of glance up at the screen and see Sicily was being a dickhead to somebody.
He's an asshole.
Really?
No.
When's that happen?
All right.
When's he going to get smacked? Somebody's going to smack him and they're going to get rewarded for it.
Yeah. No, he's a stir arsehole. There, I've tidied it up. No, he is a stirrer of the greatest proportions. But what about Mitchell? 54 possessions.
Oh, yeah.
And I never could understand why Sydney paid him as their fourth mid. This boy is good.
Oh, well, it probably says a lot about Sydney's midfield and, where he was at the time. But let's look at it critically for a moment. Collingwood's midfield is supposedly their strength, and yet they let Tommy Mitchell get off the chain to the extent of 54 touches. And, yes, he probably, doesn't hurt you as much as, say, Gary Ablett would with 54 touches, but he's still getting the ball 54 times. Notwithstanding the other blokes getting it a fair, I thought Jager O'Meara had a decent game as well, and Hawks looked all right, 101 to 67, Bucks is in trouble, I think, if they keep going like that. Anyway, today we had GWS steamrolling the Western Bulldogs by 82 points.
Watch both games today, and they were the good games. GWS, in terms of sheer quality... my early favourites for the flag, I think, because they've got a very, very good side. Very good side.
And until they can learn to cope with hard pressure sides, no macker. They'll get to the finals, but as we saw last year, put pressure on them, they fall to pieces.
Well, we'll see whether another year of maturity, Nicky, actually stands him in good stead in that aspect. Because you're right, in the last 2 years, they have wilted a bit under pressure. But they've got another 20 games under their belts now. And I reckon last year might have stung a little bit for the GWS. I think the Cinderella stuff is gone. And now they'll be hunting a flag. And they'll be right in amongst it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
133-51 is a shellacking.
Yeah, and
But Bulldogs aren't that good.
Well, they aren't that good, but by the same token, the other mob are good. They're good.
Bulldogs team won a flag 2 years ago, and their team hasn't changed that much. So they're not.
Who they have lost were some of the prime movers.
Oh, yeah, they got Jackson Tango in.
Or Holding. Yeah, they lost Stringer and brought him in instead.
Yeah. And the last game this afternoon was a rip snorter. Geelong. Geelong 97 to Melbourne 94. Both teams having their chances to win and Geelong getting over the line, Macca.
Yeah. At the end, it was funny because you had both sides trying to lose by not kicking goals and right in front. Geelong did it first, but then managed to get one which took them to the lead. Melbourne looked like they weren't going to make it. Then they got it down into the forward line, and Big Max, took a mark with about 40-odd seconds to go, about 20 seconds or less to go by the time he kicked it. And he's only kicking from 20 metres out straight in front. He would kick it 100 times out of 100 if it wasn't for a game, but he missed.
But Menzel missed two absolute sitters just before then, didn't he?
That's what I was referring to. Geelong didn't want to win it because they kept missing, but they did get one after that, which put them in front. But then Melbourne, they had the last chance and they blew it.
Now, the interest.
Excellent game, though. Excellent game to watch.
Yeah, I was at Science Alive all day today, so we only just finally kicked the last people out at 4:30 when it was supposed to finish at 4. And so when I got in the car and I'm listening to the radio, and interesting, you had Paul Roos commentating on Triple M. And he made a comment about Lever looking a bit nervous. And he's like, oh, you'll expect that. You know, he's at his new club. I'm sorry. I thought the whole thing about him was how he came into the AFL. He's played in a grand final. Why is he all of a sudden nervous at another club? And that's acceptable. What was he nervous that you guys could see?
He was very ordinary early. But I have to say this for Lever, much as I hate to say it. He was match-saving on about three occasions in the last dying 5 minutes of the game. So when it counted, he did come good.
Yeah, getting into our game shortly, but Macca, take your finger off the button. Getting into our game shortly, but I think we may see how much, notwithstanding Doty's good game, I think we may see how much we've missed Jake this season. Anyway, that's it for the weekend's results. Obviously, the table is neither here nor there, but let's go through it anyway. Leaving GWS.
There is a game on right now.
Yeah, but who cares?
Sydney are in front by 4 points.
We can't really talk about that because it's only just really started. so we got GWS on top. Quite comfortably. Port second, Hawthorn, Gold Coast, St Kilda, Richmond, Essendon, Geelong, and of course Melbourne, Adelaide, Carlton, Brisbane North, and Collingwood, and Fremantle, Western Bulldogs, with those last two to come. So, just before we go on to talk about our game, I'll give you guys each 2 minutes to talk about the current Australian cricket disaster.
You can cut my 2 minutes out because I've been out most of the day. All I know, there's something gone on with ball tampering, and that's all I know.
All right. Macca.
Well, I think it's the greatest embarrassment I've ever seen in Australian cricket, and it doesn't make you proud to be an Australian when you see a cricket team deliberately getting a piece of paper with adhesion on one side, putting sand on it, and deliberately rubbing one side of the ball to try and make it do things that it wouldn't normally do in the normal course of play. And that's been approved by the leadership team of that particular cricket team. And that's embarrassing. It makes every time an Australian team can take the field down, it just leaves it open for the opposition players, the opposition supporters, just to call us a mob of cheats. And I think there's nothing worse in this world than being a cheat. You know, I don't ever try and cheat myself. I try and always play, do everything honestly. I always play to win, and I hate losing, but I would never cheat. And if you're not good enough, you're just plain not good enough. And they have embarrassed the cricket team. They've embarrassed the nation. It is. I am disgusted with them. What punishment should be handed out, I don't know, and I'll leave that to the authorities. But from a personal point of view, it's a permanent stain on Australian cricket.
Well, Cricket Australia, through James Sutherland, came out with a statement just before, and I'll read you a little bit of it. Following discussions with Steve Smith and David Warner, they have agreed to stand down as captain and vice-captain, respectively, for the remainder of this test match. Blah, blah, blah. On the board decision to appoint an acting captain, Cricket Australia chairman David Peaver said, "The board of Cricket Australia has endorsed Tim Payne to step in as acting captain for the remainder of the test. Both Steve and David will take to the field today under Tim's captaincy. The board fully supports the process for an immediate investigation into what occurred in Cape Town. We regard this as a matter of the utmost seriousness and urgency. We'll ensure we have all the information." Blah, blah, blah. I reckon that's a wet lettuce leaf. And I don't know what Cricket Australia really need to investigate, because Steve Smith has come out and said that the leadership group colluded and decided to tamper with the ball. They made poor old Cam Bancroft the patsy, a six-game rookie. He was the one that actually is going to be stained for the rest of his life as a ball tamperer, despite acting on his captain's proviso. You're not about to say no to your captain, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
And to me, immediate resignation from Steve Smith would have been acceptable, but the fact that he came out and said, "Oh, you know, I'm not going to be standing down because I think I'm the best bloke for the job," I actually think that speaks volumes about the bloke.
I just don't think they realised what they were doing.
No, I don't think so either.
The seriousness of what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, and you do see players out on the ground trying to tamper with the ball all the time with their fingernails or and stuff like that, but this goes way beyond that. It's way beyond that to actually get a piece of adhesive paper, then get sand to stick on it, so you've created sandpaper, and then rub away at it with 30 cameras on it. These guys are just bloody lunatics.
Well, I'll tell you what,
that's absolute premeditation doing something that.
They admitted it was lunch break. They hatched the plan.
It's ridiculous.
And I'll tell you what, for those who are sympathetic, and I am a little bit sympathetic towards Cameron Bancroft, but I saw footage today on Twitter of a game during the Ashes series where Cameron Bancroft is filmed taking sugar out of a sugar bowl and putting it into his pocket at a lunch break.
Well, because that's the old English trick. That's what the English do.
So
they create sugar liquid in their mouth and then transfer that.
Well, sugar's also abrasive, so a nice way to scuff up a ball too. But, I mean, the simple fact that Steve Smith's come out and said it's the first time that we've ever done it, that's a load of bullshit. It's the first time they've been caught. Again, it's indicative of a bloke who just thinks he's a step ahead and a bit above scrutiny. And I think the reaction today, some of it may have been a little bit over the top, but I think in general the reaction today reflects how we, the Australian sporting public, feel about our Australian cricket team and what it means to us, and the fact that we don't take kindly to blokes that cheat, and particularly this mob, who are pretty sanctimonious about what happens to them.
That's correct. I mean, they carried on about, you know, the reference to Warner's wife and all the rest of it. They made a really, really big thing about it, and rightly so. But this is, I just think it's so embarrassing. It just has stained Australian cricket forever.
Yeah, and you know, I've found it difficult for quite some time to support the Australian team because I just don't like the personnel, and this hasn't made me turn towards Test cricket at all. I'm less than interested in what's going on in Test cricket at the moment. Anyway,
sadly, I love Test.
Same.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's get on to
another sad story.
Never mind. Look, it was one of those things, wasn't it, where we all saw it coming, I think, and it played out pretty much the way we thought. Essendon getting over Adelaide in the end, 14 goals, 15, 99 to 12 goals, 15, 87, a margin of, what's that, 12 points?
12 points.
Yep, and Essendon kicking 6 goals to 1, or 6 goals, 5 to 1 goal, 3 in the last quarter to win. What were your initial thoughts, guys?
You go first, Dickie.
Well, we had one good quarter. I mean, if you take the positives out of it, I didn't expect that Fogarty would play round one, but what he showed there's most definitely is there's enough there that we can see why he was so highly rated, and I think it will transfer quite well to the AFL.
A bit better than that. In the long term, he'll be a champion.
Oh, yeah. And he is that bigger size, so that does help. I did love a moment where he kind of shoved Goddard over the boundary line and then just kind of stood over the top of him. That little bit of arrogance and aggression is always nice to see from a forward. And he can back it up. And, of course, Dudai, he was a little shaky early, but once he kind of got the flow of it, he fitted in quite well. I think he just needs that little bit more kind of just security in himself, I think is probably the best way to describe it, to start leaving his man to do his the intercept marking that I've seen him do in the SANFL. He did show that he picked up the game fairly quickly, the speed of it, and we know it's a huge step up from the SANFL to the AFL, so that was nice to see. Gibbs, our other kind of the big one, third quarter was good. The other three, not so much.
Yeah. Well, let's not get into specific players too quickly. We'll just run through some head-to-head stats first. There's a couple that really stick out for me anyway in terms of where we lost the game. Disposals were pretty even, 391 Essendon, 387 Adelaide. We did kick more than handball, so that's what we want to see. Marks, we fell down. We got smashed in the air, actually. Essendon, 92 marks, Adelaide, 83. But this is the first one. Tackles, Essendon, 69 to Adelaide, 50. And as someone pointed out in the presser, what was it? Not a tackle in the last quarter?
Yeah, 50 tackles doesn't cut it.
Not a tackle in the last quarter?
No. Not with the way that we know our team should be playing.
Yeah, hitouts were even, although I felt Essendon were, the Essendon rucks were more useful around the ground, didn't really see source around the ground much. What else have we got here? We've got, we weren't as efficient as normal, obviously, 32 disposals per goal and 14 per scoring shot. We're usually down around the 11. Essendon were far more efficient, although they were wasteful in front of goal. Clearances, we were actually up 40 to 32. Rebound 50s, blah, 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 pretty even. But the other one here, contested possession, it doesn't sound like a big number, but we were minus 14 on contested possession. Essendon 156 to Adelaide 142. And that, together with the tackle count, really, to me, summed up the game. We lacked intensity at certain moments, and we just didn't really have the legs or the leg power to go through them. Disposal efficiency was fine, 76.5%. Contested marks, we got flogged, 16-11, as I said. Marks inside 50, we got flogged. We missed Tommy Lynch and Tex terribly. 19-10 marks inside 50. Clearances we won, I thought we would win the centre, and we kind of did, although in transition we got beaten. What else have we got here?
I would say, though, about the centre, that we didn't set up, we weren't interested in setting up defensively at all. There was a number of times you had Zaharakis on that outside loose running pass, and we kind of went, off you go.
Hmm.
They weren't interested in being defensive, and that pissed me off.
Yeah. That's a fair call. I felt like their mids beat us in general play just because their ability to link up We didn't seem to be able to spread and run to position as well as them. So, I mean, as I said, really the two key stats for me that stood out, tackles and contested possession, as well as Essendon's aerial dominance, I think that was, for me, really the tail of the tape.
And fitness. You know, we were talking about this on Tuesday night, Phoenix, and you and I both had great concerns about our fitness level. And in the pre-season games we'd played, we'd had very poor second halves. And, in fact, the second one against Port was a shocker. And we were a little bit worried about that. In fact, I think we both did tip Essendon, didn't we?
Yep.
I did.
Yep, I sure did.
And I just said that Essendon were a good bet at $2. And but I can't force myself to bet against Crow, so I didn't take the bet up myself. But having said that, the players we had out, they were key players. There's no doubt about that. And it had a big effect on what we had to offer. But you can still be competitive, and it's obvious that we're not fit enough to be competitive for four quarters. Because if you look at the state of the way the game was played, first quarter, you know, not much in it either way. Second quarter, again, you know, just the swings of the game going back and forth. And third quarter, I thought we'd got on top of them, and I thought at that stage, well, we've confounded me and you, and they were going to go on. We would go on and win the game, but we just didn't turn up for the last quarter, and there was nothing left in the tank.
No,
nothing left in the tank at all.
Interestingly, you could kind of see in the third quarter, it looked like Essendon were completely off their legs, that they couldn't cope, and even the commentators who were down on the ground made the comment that, you know, they were absolutely out on their feet, and they couldn't finish off that quarter. And I'm thinking, okay, did our players kind of look at that and go, oh, yeah, we don't have to try as hard in the last quarter, and then it was kind of too late, and we, as you guys have pointed out, we then didn't have enough to go up another gear that we needed to.
No, a lot of players just weren't aggressive enough, just not aggressive enough, and in that last quarter, it was just like sand just going through a sieve. It was just straight through. 20 inside 50s in that last quarter. Well, that's a shocker. And I think we only had, what, two or three or something.
Yeah.
And that's our midfield. That's our midfield not putting that pressure on, that defensive pressure on. And then they weren't running forward that they needed to. They were trying to... where normally we have Lynch and Walker doing those roles, they kind of stuck to that same game plan without those players who have exceptional tanks, because they both normally run at the midfield numbers.
What stuck out to me as a real indicator of our lack of fitness was our inability to break free from congestion. That takes a lot of strength through the legs and the core, doesn't it? And I just felt like we were stuck in the trenches. We were trying to rely very much on handballing our way out of congestion, and we didn't really have anyone capable of just breaking a tackle and bursting. Essendon's midfield had that ability to break a tackle and put five quick steps in it and break free. And I think, to me, that was really the telling sign of where we are from a fitness-based point of view.
Nikki, a question, because she's pretty close to the club. Nikki, in terms of the fitness coach, have we moved our fitness coach on that we had for the previous 2 years? And Burton brought Daddy's mate from Brisbane. Why did we get rid of the previous fitness guy?
From what I understand, he was actually headhunted for another position.
You're saying that he went rather than we moved him on?
I think it was a bit of both. I don't know too much about that.
It was reported the other way around in the paper that we'd moved him on.
Yeah, but that's the paper. They want to create a particular story around us, though, remember?
And he was grabbed pretty quickly elsewhere, I agree.
Matty Bode left as well, Nick.
Yeah, I know he did, but he's been there a very long time.
What I'm suggesting, Nikki, is that the change in personnel has not result in the same results that we had previously.
I think it's too early to tell, Macca.
Yeah.
I think,
and particularly after a premiership, and that talk that the Walker has said about. Yeah.
Not premiership.
Yeah.
Grand final.
Yeah. Should have bloody been a premiership. That it actually took quite a long time for the players to get over it.
What, physically?
I think both. And I think more mentally. I think mentally that's still sitting there a bit.
Well, it didn't seem like it to me, Nick, I've got to say, because I would have thought that if they were getting over a premiership loss mentally, two things happen. They come out with fire in their bellies round one to make a statement that they're there. And second of all, it indicates to me that they thought that they were it was almost like they had a sense of entitlement about 2017 and that flag. And the fact that they are in such a state of disbelief about the fact that they didn't win it speaks volumes to me about their willingness to work when things aren't going their way. And we've commented about this over the last couple of years on the Weekend Wrap show quite regularly, that in tough games, when things aren't going their way, we don't seem to be able to dig in. And that attitude regarding the grand final loss, if what you're saying is accurate, Nick, I don't like it. I don't like it. No one's entitled to win a premiership. You have to work until the 30th minute of the last quarter, and these blokes obviously didn't have that attitude.
Yeah, I agree with that.
No, I don't. I think I probably worded that wrong. It's not that they felt that they were entitled, but they'd done the work and they should have won it. And that's what we said.
That's silly. No. You can't say you should have won it because Richmond were there too. Richmond deserved to be there just as much.
Nikki, it's a game.
Can I try and get this out? I'm very
get
tired.
Out. Come on.
Yes. But that they actually have said that they had to have that meeting. They weren't happy with how they were training. They knew it was below par as what it should be. They had the meeting and they did the reset. And they're all the words were then coming out, we've done that, we're really focused. But I think they might be saying that, but it's still not quite right there, which is what we have, as you rightly pointed out, what we have identified, that when it gets a bit tough, they don't quite know how to get out of that yet.
Actually, you said something there which was very, very relevant there, Nikki, that and again, it comes back to what I was mentioning about the change in coaching staff. The players have called a meeting to say with the management to say that they weren't working hard enough. The players called it, not the management called it.
I don't know. I'm not sold about this squad, but anyway, let's go through some individual stats because we did have some individual good performances. Notwithstanding,
can I just say a comment that we had in our little messenger chat whilst the game was on between a number of us? I loved the comment that somebody talked about Laird, that we didn't know he had another gear and he's now up to seventh.
Yeah, he's a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, well, let's run through it. We had Matty Crouch doing what Matty Crouch does, 41 touches, 18 and 23, 6 marks, 2 tackles, 3 inside 50s, 7 clearances.
Very good game.
Well, he went at 80% disposal efficiency, which is great to see. 11 contested possessions, 2 centre clearances, 5 around the stoppages, 8 score involvements. Was also almost a team high.
What I love about Matty, you could tag him, but he'll still get the same number of possessions. Well, he just sees ball, goes ball.
Yeah, big thing about Matty's game this week is that he had 80% time on ground. And I know that, we're a bit short with Kirtley going off. But notwithstanding, 80% time on ground is a bit of a lift in Matty's time on ground. We had Rory, obviously, 15 and 25 for 40 touches, 8 marks. The Game of Crows winner, which is the most important thing, of course. Two inside 50s, eight rebound 50s, 14 contested possessions, went 87.5, was going at 100% disposal efficiency until very deep in the game, actually. Seven score involvements, 502 metres game, 15 intercept possessions. Not a bad run from Rory.
And you know, he was doing a lot more pushing up the ground, actually taking Brody's role. And you actually saw him getting closer to a 50 to do that deliver into the forward 50 area, which was a real pleasure to see.
When you look at Rory Laird and realise that this guy was a rookie, I mean, he didn't make it onto a senior list. He was a rookie, and he's very short by comparison to the player he's playing up against, and yet he takes marks all over the place. And he's a brilliant competitor, and he's an outstanding footballer. And he's 100%. What he's got to give, he gives every week. He's a star.
Yep. Bryce Gibbs, a good start. 35 touches, 21 kicks, 14 handballs. So really good ratio there. 7 marks, kicked 2 goals, 1. 4 tackles, 8 inside 50s, 7 clearances, 2 rebound 50s. 13 contested possessions. The only knock was probably he turned it over a bit. Had 6 turnovers and went at 68% efficiency. But a good start.
I disagree with Nicky. I thought he had you know, for a guy playing his first game with the club, we knock Lever, but there's a certain element of a nerve, but that goes very quickly once you start playing. And I thought, you know, it's just that you're not quite used to the players around you so much. I thought Gibbsy had a pretty good game first up.
I thought his third quarter was sensational. His third quarter, he'd figured out how we play and how to play with us. What I was really not happy about in the first two quarters and why I'm marking him quite heavily against it is the simple fact was when he had to defensively run in the midfield, even attempt to put on any pressure, he'd just kind of watch a Essendon player waltz past him and go, oh, yeah. I don't like seeing that in a midfielder.
He
might have gotten away from that in Carlton.
Nick,
he's not going to get away here.
Yeah, but how many times did you see that, Nicky? I saw that once, actually. I do remember one incident where he did.
Oh, no, there were a couple. There was probably about two or three.
You would have been hating on Richie Douglas for the last 5 years, then. Just saying.
Yeah, good one.
Anyway, we'll get to him.
But Gibbs is supposed to be such as Rolls Royce and how much he was good at defensively. And it was like, hang on, I've watched you play before. You don't do that much. Why are you doing it now? It was really odd for me to see that. And I think that's why I'm being considerably harsher on him.
I think it's the exception, not the rule, Nikki.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I think it will be. But that wasn't nice to see in the first two quarters in a game for premiership points.
He was okay.
Someone who I thought was okay and slipped into the side really well was Paul Seedsman. Had 24 touches, 14 and 10, 4 marks, good 4 game. Tackles, 6 inside 50s, 3 rebound 50s. I just thought he was really solid. Went at 75%. Efficiency, but the thing we want from Seed is the thing that we miss from Brody, and that's metres gained, and he had 640 metres gained for a team high. Turned it over a bit, 8 turnovers, but by and large, I thought Seedsman's game was pretty good.
Yeah, good game.
Yep, agree. I liked his game.
Sloaney was held, I thought, 11 and 12 for 23. 7 tackles, as you'd expect from the Bulldog, though. 5 inside 50s. Still had 6 clearances, but just his output was a little down. He was under 70% disposal efficiency with 12 contested, but 8 1-percenters, 7 turnovers probably just soured that a little bit. But he was on the ground for quite a bit of time as well. And
we played him up forward a lot, and he didn't. I don't think he coped with it, and once we did that, the ball then didn't get up forward. So whilst he was on ground for a lot of that time, he was up forward and the ball wasn't down there.
Yeah, I thought it was a useless move, that one.
Yeah, I like Rory floating forward. He tends to take those marks coming in from the side when he's like third man up, but when he's actually playing forward, I don't think he's actually that effective.
No, agree.
Debutant Tommy Duday, pretty good start, I reckon. 21 disposals, 7 and 14. 7 marks down back, almost got over the line for Gamer Crows. 2 tackles, 4 rebound 50s. Went at 85% disposal efficiency, was really good to see. 9 1-percenters. Probably needs to hurt the opposition a little bit more with his disposal, but that'll come, I think, with confidence. But 6 intercept possessions was really good. So I thought after a shaky beginning from Tom where he was just finding his way, I thought he tightened up and had a really good game for his first up.
Yeah, I agree with that. He started off shaky and then was very nervous, but he just got a little bit better as the game went on. And in the last quarter when things were really tight and tough, he was still trying his guts out. And I think that he's going to end up a good player.
Made good decisions with his disposals.
Safe decisions. They're safe,
but at that context of what he's doing initially, that's good to see. As a whole, I actually thought our defensive unit had a decent game, even though we lost.
Not Hardigan. Disagree. Not Hardigan, Jesus.
Oh, no, was
not you? Talia, he,
Natalia was doing well on Danaher, but then Hardigan was getting beaten by Hooker, so we had to swap. And Hardigan actually did okay on Danaher for most of that period of time. He was corralling him really quite well. And I liked that we went, okay, that's not working, quick, change it. We didn't stick to it. But as a defensive unit, that's what I'm talking about in terms of the way they were playing together as a unit, they were let down by the midfield. I thought they had an okay game.
Being kind.
I think so. Look, because the scoreboard flattered us, Nick. We should have been 6 down at half time. Really.
Oh, totally.
But anyway, look, the thing I think, my comment about the defensive unit with the omission of Brody Smith and the defection of Jake Lever, we lack creativity down back. We've got Jake Kelly, who's a dour back flanker or back pocket. We've got Tom, who's just finding his way and is being very careful with disposal. Daniel Talia, who couldn't hit the side of a barn door at the moment, went at 57% disposal efficiency out of 11 kicks. We've got Kyle Hardigan, who doesn't tend to hurt with his possessions either. We don't have many, if any, people running off that half-back line at the moment that can hurt with their disposal and set up play, apart from, obviously, Rory Laird. And even Rory Laird can tend to give the first easy one at times rather than going for the more difficult, creative one. I really think it showed up in the way that we moved the ball from our defence. We were far slower in transition. I was saying to Macca before the cast, I don't recall us actually doing a half-back to shot for goal very often, which was our trademark last year. Our trademark was our bounce-off half-back and our quick transition, our hitting up a target and our shot at goal. There was hardly any of that, and I think a lot of that stems from the type of player we've got down back now, and I think that's something that really needs to be addressed.
Yeah, the one player who did do it was Seedsman.
There was another one, which is why I'm sitting here whilst you're talking about that with a smile on my face, because when that one, there was that one that that really did become that transition to goal, and it was McKay. Oh. The people everybody loves. Hey, I actually thought he had a good game.
Well, for his by his go standards, yes.
He was the one. When we actually had that run going, he was that one who was breaking the line and putting the ball into dangerous positions.
Well, let's have a look at D-Mac's stats. He had 15 and 5 for 20. He had 4 tackles. He had 2 inside 50s, 6 rebound 50s. Went at 90% disposal efficiency, 4 1-percenters, and 4 score involvements and 546 metres gained with 6 intercepts with 77% time on ground. It was a decent game from D-Mac, absolutely, except when we needed him to do something in the crunch.
So here's the time for the argument between you and I.
I'm not going to argue. I'm just going to make a statement, Nick, and you probably won't agree with me, but this is just how I feel about it.
The only thing I'll say about, though, that Phoenix is...
Why are you going to interrupt me?
Why not? We like doing it. You interrupt us.
So McKay had a lot of mates in that respect.
Oh, yeah. No, look, there are times in games where something just has to happen, right? It's a smother or a spoil or kicking a goal from a difficult position. And there was a moment in that fourth quarter where we were still kind of around the mark, and I think it was on the near side wing. The ball had sort of fumbled around, gone through sets of hands, and it had gone back towards David with a couple of Essendon players running towards him, and David let the ball get behind him. The Essendon players ran on, and they got a goal from it, and that put them in front, I believe, or it could have put them an extra goal in front. Notwithstanding David's game, which I thought was pretty decent, from your, like, David McKay is our second most experienced player on the ground, right? Our second most experienced player. He needs to take that ball. That's one of those moments where you don't care whether a guy's had 5 touches or 50 touches. In that moment, he needs to take that ball. And that's my complaint about DMac, is that in those moments, and he's not alone, Richard Douglas is another one, I'm about to torch him as well, but in those moments, a bloke with David's experience needs to sum up the situation and realise if the ball gets behind him, we're caught out of position. And he didn't do it. And that's my criticism.
Yeah, that's a fair one.
My criticism of your criticism at the time was your laid it all on DMac, but just prior to that was another of our senior players who happened to be captaining the side who did 2 fuck-ups. Just prior to it, that led to that moment.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. But that's it. There are clutch things, Nikki. There are clutch things that just...
So where was that clutch thing from Sloan, who people are saying should be paid a lot more money than what David McKay gets, who was captaining the side, who is a senior experienced player and is captaining the side. And he let us down twice before that happened. Yeah, so that's my problem. DMac gets so much shit labelled on him, and that's what kind of got my goat about. Yes, that was wrong. I agree that it was wrong. But the equal amount of crap or the shit needs to be done on Sloan as well, not just on him.
I can't disagree more.
Sloan let two things just prior to that, Sloan stuffed up that led to that moment. No moment happens in isolation.
No moment happens in isolation. It's a fluid game. But the simple fact is Sloaney messed up a couple of things actually going for the ball, and they didn't result in the ball getting behind him and turning over. It resulted in fumbles.
Because he was actually heading towards Essendon goals, and he kept pushing it towards the Essendon goals, where he could see those players coming.
And DMac's right there, and DMac's right. And look, there was a similar situation. Like, DMac's a shortish player, right? There was a situation earlier in the game where a ball got fired out in the forward lines, come in quickly, and I think it was might have been Douglas fired out a handball to Jenkins, who dished it off, and someone kicked a goal. The comparison is that Jenkins had to take the ball at his feet. Jenkins is, 200 centimetres just about, and he had to take the ball at his feet and give it off. He had to do it in order for him to be able to give it off for us to get a goal, and he did it. And you know my attitude about Josh Jenkins. The David McKay situation was the same. There are just moments where things have to be done, and it's those moments that cost you big games, and unfortunately, David can get his nice 20 possessions, and he did play a reasonable game.
And some hard ones. Yeah,
7 contested possessions, win at 90%. That's fine from a halfback flanker, but from your most experienced player, Nick.
A lot of those kicks were actually risky kicks. They weren't the safe ones, getting that 90%. And you compare it to Sloan. Yeah. I think Sloan had a poor game.
Well, I think we should move on. I mean, you're never going to agree.
Yeah, we're not going to agree. But
And you also said you were just making a statement and that was it.
Yeah, okay. We'll move on then. Cam Ellis-Yolman, difficult to assess his game because his numbers are okay. He had 17 touches, 5 marks, 3 inside 50s, 6 clearances, 2 rebound 50s, had 11 contested posies, when at 76.5%, the knock's always on his efficiency, so that's pretty good. Three centre clearances, three around the ground, five score involvements. Didn't probably hurt with his possessions as much.
But I didn't think that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, didn't think it was a terrible game from Cameron.
It was a sort of a vanilla game, you know, that you can't really knock him and you can't really praise him. He was just sort of, he was there and he was useful, and but he didn't do much with his possessions, and I got not much more to say than that.
Looked nervous to me.
Yeah, I go along with that because, he's sort of playing on the edge because he's trying to get into the side and he's only sort of borderline, but he's probably borderline because that's where he sits.
Yeah. That's fair call, I think. Now, Eddie Betts, 7-7 for 14. He had a couple of marks, although he went for 19 hangers. Two tackles.
Eddie, stop doing that.
Well, he's actually, it's a serious issue now. He's going more and more for these hangs, and he's supposed to be on the deck. Is that an indictment on our bloke's ability to take contested marks, or is it just Eddie Lairising? I don't know.
Bit of both.
57% disposal efficiency, so he wasn't really effective by foot. Six score involvements, but that's, you'd expect that from your forward pocket. He has trouble with Saad, but Eddie, if he wants the plaudits when things are going well, Eddie's also got to learn to roll up his sleeves when things aren't going his way.
Yeah, just one of his good games. It wasn't a good game by Eddie, and when I say a good game, it wasn't a damaging game by Eddie at all.
Mm.
I don't know whether because Charlie's not there, you know. To
If Eddie's probably got to rely on Charlie, I don't. Isn't,
no, I don't mean that, but they complemented each other in the sense that what one didn't do, the other one would do, and therefore, because if one did it, the other one benefited from it. Whereas Eddie sort of, even though Lachlan Murphy was there, he can't do what Charlie did. And I just
think it was a first game player, for God's sake.
Yeah. What was Murphy's time on ground? Because I didn't think he was on there that much.
75%.
Hold it. I never rubbish the guy. I just said that Murphy can't do it. He's a rookie playing his first game. He's not going to do what Charlie did. And that leaves Eddie more exposed to do it all himself. That's the point I'm trying to make. And Eddie didn't really manage it.
On Tuesday night, I just started, and I didn't have time to finish it because I had to work today. I was going to do it tonight, but I'll do it on Tuesday night. Just an analysis of Eddie's last 10 games. I think I've done it since the bye last year. It's interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, you might be onto something.
Yeah. Anyway, right, the next bake, Richie Douglas, another experienced player. 13 touches, three marks, two behinds, four inside 50s, five contested possessions, went at 61%, nine score involvements. That's because he played forward of the ball quite a bit. But wow, I don't know how much time Rich has got left, to be honest.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
No, didn't have a great game. He did a couple of good things, but, he did a lot of other things that weren't.
Yeah, I think the bad outweighs the good in that respect.
Definitely. No, he's in the minus. There's no doubt about that. He's in the minus. But
He's a first pick, Richard Douglas. He's played over 200 games. He's a senior player. He's played in finals. His output has got to be more than 13 touches. It's got to be more. 13 touches in 84% time on ground.
Nobody's arguing.
He does a couple of nice things. He's a skillful player. He can do a couple of nice things. But for God's sake, he's got to get the ball 30 times, surely, or at least 25.
Yeah, at least 25. It should be. He should have had double the number of possessions that he had.
Yep, absolutely. And I've got to say, his decision to bump Merritt was just stupidity. He was coming from in front. Merritt was down low. They should know, after this rule's been in place for two seasons, they should know that the percentages are completely against them in those circumstances. All he had to do was corral Merritt, wait for Merritt to get the ball, and then just cover him up. But no, he got shitty because of what had happened 5 minutes before, and he tried to take him out, and now he's going to be out for a couple of weeks when we're down on midfield strength.
No, he's only going to be out for 1 week.
Well, 1 week.
If they accept it.
Go back. Why wouldn't they accept it?
Well, we won't know if they accept it.
But why wouldn't they? Why would they even consider appealing? He was guilty.
Because the vision they're actually using, I don't think it's conclusive. It got him in the head.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm looking at that vision. No, at the time, and I did say this on Twitter about a slight discussion with Pete regarding this, was I initially thought, yeah, he totally got him in the head. But then they showed the vision that they based the call on.
You're talking about the AFL tweet with the... You can see Merritt's head move before Douglas hits his shoulder.
That doesn't mean he hit it.
Well, how else does his bloody head move? It wasn't windy.
If he'd hit his body, which he does at the same time.
No, he doesn't. He hits his body afterwards. He hits his head.
Your head moves before your body because of the bulk.
Hang on. Let's just look at physics here. Your head moves if your body's been hit, but if your body hasn't been hit yet, when your head's moved,
his
it kind of suggests...
Was hit at the same
No, it wasn't. His shoulder was hit afterwards. That's so bloody obvious.
The
thigh gets hit. Oh, my God. It's so bloody obvious. His shoulder
the
moves...
The angle is horrible.
His shoulder moves past Merritt's head. Merritt's head moves, and then Douglas hits Merritt's shoulder. It's so bloody obvious, it's not funny.
The other problem is they're using a camera with a zoom lens.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No, Nikki, let me make one point.
Because that distorts distance.
I actually agree with everything. Everything you said, bar one thing, I argued with Phoenix for quite some time that he didn't hit him in the head. And a very same point about you making about perspective from the angle you take it and the distance and all the rest of it. And I was pretty convinced in my own mind that he had hit him on the shoulder only, and the shoulder and his own shoulder had hit him in the head. And that part is actually correct. But unfortunately, if you really watch it slowly, the tip of Douglas's shoulder does clip Merritt's head before...
You can't tell from that angle.
Nikki, you have to see this thing from all different angles.
Macca. That is the vision they use. That is the vision they made the judgment on.
And on
that vision doesn't show what you're saying. I'm pretty sure there is other vision that does show it, but that vision
If there's vision that shows it, and you can't tell me they looked at one angle, Nikki, that might have been
the one we said.
Hang on, that might have been the conclusive vision that synced up.
Wording was this.
I know what the wording was. I understand what the wording was.
This is the vision we've used to make the decision. We looked at other ones. They didn't say this is the concluding. Right. This is the vision.
But, Nikki, if you commit three offences and you're innocent on two but you're guilty of the third one, you're guilty.
Anyway, Richard Douglas should not have even attempted to bump him. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
These days, I think...
Because watching it in full motion, Dougie's heading for the ball. Merritt...
He's not heading for the ball at any stage. Is he heading for the ball? He's tucked up very early on.
He's heading to where the ball is. Merritt has gone down earlier.
Richard Douglas at never stage made the ball his contest.
The thing is, yes, he is allowed to bump, though... But there's some real grey areas there.
There's no
grey
areas.
I actually think they should have kept the one. But I think Nikki, he's bloody lucky to get the one.
Nikki, you know, the whole point is that he really was trying to get square for what Merritt had done to him a little bit.
Exactly
earlier.
Right. Exactly right.
We know Dougie does that. But my problem is the AFL ruling on this and the way they've gone about it. I think there are grey areas that you could make an argument.
There's no grey areas. Don't hit the head. It's not a grey area. It's not a grey area. You don't hit the head. Simple.
One thing you will say about this, though, it does show how hypocritical the AFL was in letting Cotchin off last year.
Oh, I don't really want to. No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were. No. He's more of a thug than Dougie is.
Oh, give it.
No, he's not a thug, but he was guilty.
Give
anyhow,
it.
Cotchin has form in doing it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Righto, let's go on. I want to talk about Rory Atkins, another bloke that's skating on the edge.
Weak as piss.
14 disposals. Let me get through the stats, Macca. 14 disposals, two tackles, four inside 50s. Did he have a contested possession? Four contested possessions, went at 71, 300 metres gained, a couple of turnovers on, 86% time on ground. Now you can say it.
Yeah, look, here's a guy who's got a lot of talent. He's got excellent talent, and he's got so much skill, and he's got ability. He's got pace. He's got ability to kick the ball. And if he could grow a heart, he'd be a very good footballer. And you know, Rory Atkins, he lets himself down virtually every week by squibbing the hard ball or the efforts that he put in. They are sub-AFL standard when it comes to the hard stuff. And it's about time this guy either started putting in and pulling his weight physically as well, and I don't mean going around bashing everybody, but earning hard footballs and disputing them at least to hold the ball in the area rather than just being very limp-wristed as he is at the moment. So I think it's so unfair that poor old David McKay gets bashed to pieces when he actually does risk his body, and this bloke here, he doesn't. I think he's worthy of more criticism than David McKay is because he doesn't go in hard enough.
I don't think we can disagree with that, can we, Phoenix?
Nope, absolutely. 100% hit him between the eyes, Macca.
He's got the talent, and he has done it every so often, which is what is so frustrating.
Yeah, but Nick, there's a lot of blokes running around in Div 2 amateurs that can lace out a bloke when they're not under pressure. Rory Atkins is playing AFL football. There's more to life in AFL football than being able to dance around a bit and kick a nice 20-metre pass. You've got to be able to get in and get your ball, and you've got to put your body on the line. And he doesn't do it. He doesn't do it. And more than that, when the game is physical, when the game is fast, when the game isn't on his terms, he doesn't find a way to get involved.
No.
He needs the ball given to him. And for an outside player, I understand he's a receiver, but you've still got to put yourself in the right positions. You've still got to get involved with the play. And Rory goes missing too much. And, you know, he got worked out very quick. He had a purple patch early last year when he snuck under people's guard. Then he got peroxide and everyone saw him. And
that was stupid.
Well, yeah. But, you know, again, people might think it's stupid, but it speaks to a bloke's attitude. And he's got to roll up his sleeves. And I'm off the Rory Atkins train. I'm sorry, Pete, if you're listening. But because I know you're maybe a bit of a G, but I'm off the Rory Atkins train. He's a nice, neat little footballer, but he needs to develop a bit of heart.
Yep, I agree.
All right.
Have a bit of a go at Brody Smith about that hairdo, though. He was the one egging him on.
Yeah, well, you suggested it. The people have got their own brains, haven't they? They can make their own decisions. Josh Jenkins, interesting game from Josh. 6-5 for 11, took 5 marks, kicked 2-2, 3 tackles, 4 hit-outs, 2 inside 50s, 5 clangers, gave away a few frees, only went at 63.5 disposal, took 4 marks inside 50, 7 score involvements. How did we see Josh's game?
It was an intriguing game, actually, because he was an absolute powder puff for about half the game.
Well, he didn't get a kick in the first quarter. Yeah, no kicks, no marks. 2 handballs in the first quarter.
Yeah. He was playing powder puff footy. And it's as if somebody said to him, you have to go in harder and try, etc. Now, he's not used to it. He doesn't really know how to do it. Mm. And he was trying to do it. Mm. And he did actually hold a few marks. But it's
something he took a contested mark, Phoenix.
I know, but it's totally foreign to his nature.
It was out in front of him, though.
It's totally foreign to his nature, and he doesn't do it naturally at all. And he looked strange doing it because he didn't do it instinctively like other players do.
No, it's not natural.
it's not natural to him, but if they can rev him up every week so that at least he tries to do it like that, it you won't swag him as much as you do when you that like in that first quarter of a bit when he was just, as I said, powder puff footing.
He was being played out of full forward pretty much exclusively except when he went into the ruck, from what I could see on the vision. Whereas sometimes when we have Tex there, we would swap him. But I don't think that happened with Fogarty. I think when Fogarty went more full forward was when Jenkins was in the ruck or went to the bench for a rest. So I think – and that first quarter we were having – we were struggling to get the ball forward.
Let's talk about his time in the ruck, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he gives Sauce probably, what, a three to five minute chop out every quarter?
It's about 5 to 7 minutes, I'd say.
Okay. So if we're talking five, let's be conservative, 5 minutes a quarter, right? So he's playing 20 minutes on the ball, right, on the ball. In that time, he's had 4 hit-outs. And he's taking and he's taken 5 marks for the game. This is a bloke who a tall bloke who's got a fantastic engine, who's playing 20 minutes on the ball, and we're getting 4 hit outs from the guy.
Yeah.
I know he's a second ruck, but it like
he's not.
All right. Let me describe a player to you. All right, a great engine. Is quite quick for his size, has a raking kick, and can take a mark out in front of him. Who am I describing?
Yeah, that's Josh Jenkins.
It's also Lance Franklin. Josh Jenkins actually has the physical attributes and the skills to be Lance Franklin. Wouldn't you agree? He's got all the...
Yeah.
Like, if you're talking about all the boxes that need ticking, he's as quick as Franklin... He can kick it like Franklin. He's got the engine like Franklin. He can run up and down the ground. Maybe we are playing Josh in the wrong position. Maybe we are sucked in by the fact that he's 197 centimetres or whatever. Maybe we should stop playing him in a key position. Maybe we should be starting to play him in a running position.
Maybe we should play him as 23rd man.
Well, Richmond played Matty Richardson off a wing for the last couple of years of his career with great effect. I'm starting to wonder whether Josh Jenkins should be played up the ground on a wing.
That could be interesting.
Pretty, I don't know.
Well, because the thing is, Macca, the thing is, right, we criticise him because he doesn't take a contested mark. Right? He doesn't play as a key position forward. That's always been my criticism of him. But let's face it, he's got some fantastic attributes. And if we're going to play him... maybe we need to think outside the box. Even some of Buddy's best work is done out of the midfield or playing very high up the ground and coming back around. Josh has got a lot of the attributes that Lance has got, and yet who would you rather in your side? Lance every day of the week. Yeah, but it doesn't actually need to be the case.
One massive difference, Lance Franklin's got a lot of want in him.
Well, and that's exactly another point, and that's been the other criticism of Josh the whole time, that he doesn't get the ball when it's anything less than on his terms. He's not very good at getting the 50-50 contest, and he doesn't stay in the contest for long enough.
I reckon he got some nasty words said to him at half-time, because after half-time, and I am one of these critics as you are, I thought he was actually trying in the second half. And I said, it doesn't come naturally to him. It doesn't come.
Yeah, three kicks and no marks in the third quarter. You want to rethink?
No, I said, but I didn't say he got the ball. I said he was trying.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come naturally to him.
Mm. Well, it definitely doesn't come naturally to him. And I don't want to dwell on it too much longer. We're running through some time. We're already hour and 10, for goodness sakes. But, but yeah, I wouldn't mind... I wouldn't mind seeing them. In fact, I would have thought playing Josh as Lynch's or Walker's replacement in that lead-up would have been
a better way
of using him than having him deep. Even though he should be playing deep, and I think I said on Tuesday we should play him deep, in retrospect, because he doesn't play like a 197 player, maybe we just need to play to his strengths, which is his tank and his long kicking and his good, you know, reasonably good field kicking. And maybe we play him as that leader.
There's no reason why he couldn't do the Lynch thing, because Lynch basically doesn't take contested high marks. He takes chest marks.
Not really. Yeah, not really. Anyway, let's move forward. We've got a bit to cover yet, and we're already over time. Mitchie McGovern, I thought, was pretty disappointing, but they just sat on him, really. 9 touches, 4 marks, kicked the goal, didn't do much not else, enough. Really.
Needs to learn how to break that.
Yeah, yep. He didn't do enough.
Yep. Well, with Mitch, I think... he's quite used to coming in third man up. You know, you got your big forwards going for the ball, and Mitch is able to float in. Not to say he can't do it, but I think he's got to learn to be the focal point.
Well, he made a comment pre-season that he'd like to become one of the key players up forward. Yep. To do that, you've got to present yourself as well for that to happen, and he didn't do that.
Yep. Some games he just completely misjudges the ball. You can see him, he flies, and he's just completely misjudged it. And this was a game where that happened.
It seemed to be the case, yeah. I think because he was actually fairly closely checked, he was actually jumping from bad positions.
Anyway. And we were using him as the Lynch role.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, this year in Crowcast Weekend Wrap, we're going to have a couple of awards because we should do this. We're going to have the Jet Award for the best player every week. We're going to have the Wake Up Award for the worst player every week and the Breakout Award for the best rookie, which I've defined as less than 20 games. So I've probably sprung you guys on this with no notice, Nikki and Macca. So while you're thinking about who you'd pick for each of those three, we chucked it out to Twitter, and the overwhelming Jet Award, People's Choice Jet Award, goes to Rory Laird. 57% of the vote. Matty Crouch and Bryce Gibbs were even on 22% of the vote. The Wake Up Award, Eddie Betts gave it a good run for a while, but Rory Atkins in the end won comfortably the Wake Up Award with 55% of the People's Choice votes on Twitter. And the Breakout Award... Sorry, go on.
The people did a good job. I'll go along with those.
This one's interesting because I don't agree with this one. The Breakout Award, they've given it to the Fog, 59% of the votes. Dude with 39% of the vote. So the People's Choice have gone for Rory Laird, Rory Atkins, and Fogarty.
What was Fogarty's vote?
For the Breakout Award, for the best game by a player with less than 20 games on the ground.
That was Dodie.
Yeah. Well, I would have thought. I think Darcy's got some really nice qualities about him, and he's going to be a good player, you can just tell. But in the end,
he's kind of hit the nail on the head. Fog has cult appeal.
He does have kind of feel. And commentators talk
And he's
up.
A big forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to a defender.
Talked up. But he will be good. But he only had 6 kicks, took 3 marks, kicked 2 goals. You know,
for an 18-year-old lad to be standing Hurley, a bloke like Hurley, and, you know, even getting the 6 kicks and a couple of goals is a bloody good effort.
It's a good effort, but it's not the best. First of all, I'll throw it over to you guys. You guys any got any variations on the People's Choice? Apart from
I did vote.
Oh, you did
and
vote?
And it was kind of a bit fun. I did vote. So even though I pretty much agree with everybody, Laird, I did want to give Matty Crouch a vote because I still thought his game was – he was consistent as well overall. But I kind of did that because I knew everybody else was going to be voting for Laird. I agree totally on Atkins. That was a game that was made for Atkins.
Should have been, yep.
Absolutely.
How about you, Macca? Any variations there?
No. Except for Dodie or Dodie, whichever it's called.
Runs with Dodie. Yeah, I always have to remember that. Runs with Dodie.
Right, yep. Okay. I think he should have got the last award.
I mean, we're giving it. We're just throwing it open to the people to see what they think. But as we did on Tuesday night, we don't take any notice of it in the end. Look, my personal view, I actually thought Seedsman was our second best. It's in terms of impact on play. But Rory Laird, you couldn't go past him for the Jet Award for this week.
Yep.
Rory Atkins is a lay down. Sorry, go on.
It'll be nice to see in the Brownlow when this comes through, because normally when we, even if it's a close game when we lose, we never get any votes. Mm. But I reckon it'll be quite interesting to see if they do, if Laird does get in there.
Yeah, well, really, apart from Zaharakis, they're fairly even, the Bombers, so it'd be interesting. The Wake Up Award, I'm in total agreement. Rory Atkins, I probably didn't even need to put another one up. But I tell you what, the other two that I did put up, Douglas and Betts, they're lucky that Atkins was on the ground from that point of view, because...
No, Douglas would win that easily over Betts. I think for me, Betts is making some mistakes, yes, but I think he's actually trying a lot more.
Yeah, no, agreed.
I think Eddie's actually looking like he's trying, but he's not. Eddie's got to be more effective with what he does. There's a lot of one hand, almost, you know, tricky dicky little stuff. At some stage, he's just got to run through and take the ball, two hands, and do something with it. That goal that he missed was just sheer lack of concentration. He kicks that every day of the week. My 10-year-old son could have kicked that.
Yeah,
you know, it was a lack of concentration. Eddie is a senior player; he needs to do better. And I'm going with the Dode as well for the breakout award. I thought after a shaky start, he was very serviceable. I thought Cam Ellis-Yolman actually was probably our second best rookie. Fogarty was certainly the Trent Henschel potential award with what he brought through. Mm. So. That's those awards. Every week we'll be posting those up on Twitter, so if you've got any objections, then by all means, tweet away with the hashtag CCRap. Now, we did have Scorpus's Game of Crows on Tuesday night. Let's see what the results were there. So it was Mark's this week, Nikki. I don't know whether you availed yourself of the competition this week.
No, I just giggle at you guys with all your nominations and people going, oh, my God, what is it? What is it? And getting panicky. So that just amuses me.
Yeah, so we had Lairdy as the main mark taker with 8. We had 2 on 7, Dude and Gibbs, and then we had Matty Crouch and Jake Kelly. So the way we're doing it this year, there's no tie. So Lairdy straight out in front. To anyone that picked Laird got 3. Anyone that picked Dude or Gibbs gets 2. And anyone that picked Crouch or Kelly gets 1. And I won't read out the scoreboard because there's too many on 3 at the moment. But if you want to check the scoreboard, I picked Bloody Lynch, so I was out before we even started. But if you want to check the scoreboard, go to aflcrowcast.com/competitions/game of crows or just follow the menu from aflcrowcast.com, and the leaderboard is there, and each week that'll be updated with everyone's tips. And if I happen to miss you, let me know on one of our social media platforms, and as long as I can see an entry with the appropriate timestamp, I will slot you in. Macca, you went for... you go for? You went for Matty Crouch, so you got a point.
Matty Crouch, I went.
Yeah, you were the only Crowcaster that got a point. Me, Pete, and Donkey, no good.
Lord that over them, Macca. Lord that over them.
Well, me and Pete went for Lynch, and Donkey went for Sloan, so...
two of them had a scratching, Nicky, so I'm not going to really lord it too much.
Now DSG on the chat, and we are live and interactive here, even though we're not taking in notes of these idiots on the chat. But DSG on the chat is having a whinge because he wasn't able to swap his selection after team selections. Now, in the past, we've done Game of Crows on Thursday night, and as a consequence, people have had the benefit of team selections. We've added a degree of difficulty this year because not only have you got to predict the winner of whatever stat, but you've also got to predict that they're actually going to be in the team. So it's just an added extra degree of difficulty just to sort the men out from the boys. DSG, I was in your boat too, and I could have very easily caved and allowed changes, but I stuck firm. Unlike the Australian cricket team, I'm a man of integrity. So we'll see how that goes during the season. What else have we got? We got anything? Oh, I know what we got. Nikki.
My cock wobble.
I'm going to have to make that a bit louder, I think. Anyway, let's go.
I think, once again, it has to go to my favourite people of all time, which is the AFL. I love giving these to the AFL because, my God, do they fuck things up. In re-recording every team, well, pretty much every team song except for their love child and GWS, and most clubs going, well, we weren't asked. Why did you go and do that? What a waste of money, basically. What?
Why did they?
And why? I don't know.
Oh, I think it's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous.
They couldn't even make West Coast songs sound better. So why bother doing it? That's the one you really got to fix.
I think it was more about updating the quality rather than the actual song itself.
Well, if you take Ports, though, there was drums beating in there, you know, which put more tension than that into it. And they took that out. It sounds weaker without it.
Yeah. Although PJ Crows has just yelled in the chat about Beveridge. What did he do?
Well, Beveridge called a bloke a liar for saying something that was true.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Nikki. Yeah, I'm sorry, Nikki. Beveridge must be the Cock Womble Award. Has to be.
Oh, and yes. And, oh, no, PJ's on fire because there's also, and he said it's the Bulldogs AFLW player. There's actually the Bulldogs themselves.
Right, let's have this.
Bloody Peter Gordon.
Let's have this conversation.
Yep.
On what planet is this a human rights issue, Nikki?
None.
Exactly. Now, I had an argument today with someone on a completely different topic, but I'm getting a bit tired of the propensity of people, I'm not going to specify gender, but just people with boobs, who
everybody has boobs,
who are quite free and easy about raising equality and sexism and all the rest of it when it comes to their perception of the amount of coverage that AFLW gets today. Now, what I was referring to was a tweet that came from some idiot who was complaining that the news today was dominated by the ball tampering saga and wasn't focused enough on the AFLW grand final.
And,
well, one's an international sport and one's a national sport.
Not only is one an international sport, one's a national, which is very true, but the AFL, pardon me if I'm wrong, but the AFLW grand final was yesterday, yeah?
Yes.
So the coverage happened yesterday, right?
Yes.
And the cricket thing happened today, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So there's a timing thing.
Yeah, so I've also come back with the fact that Thanasi Kokkinakis has just knocked off the world number one, Roger Federer, the first Australian to ever knock off Roger Federer while he's been number one in the quarters in Miami, probably Thanasi's biggest win of his tennis career, and hardly got a mention until about midday when everyone had calmed down about the ball tampering. Now, was that sexist as well, or was that just prioritising coverage?
That's prioritising coverage.
Right, so, you know, one's sexism and one's prioritising coverage. Please, ladies who are listening, and I know we have a lot of ladies listening and I'm very grateful for it, please, please, please do not turn the AFLW into a vehicle to drive feminism or feminist opinions, because it actually detracts from the sport and it will turn people off.
Oh, and actually, I'm really glad you raised that particular point, because it's a potential danger that I can see coming up, that used in the wrong hands by the wrong people, they'll make something that is very, very good into something that isn't that good, because they'll be trying to push it in certain directions for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. And what you're just talking about is one of them.
Yeah, it's in danger of becoming part of an agenda.
What it is is people who actually don't understand what that actually is, what feminism actually really is. So it's not them pushing a feminist agenda. It's them just trying to push an argument using something they shouldn't actually be using towards in that argument.
Yeah, but Nikki, I saw somewhere where, for example, that or did I hear on 5AA, I'm not quite sure which, that there were a complaint by a woman about the fact that the women's football was not getting the same coverage as the men's football was. And that the men's was only pre-season football at that stage, whereas the women's was a competition. But it's the, if you put it, look at the number of supporters for the AFL men's is massive. You know, it runs in the millions. And for the women's, which because it's a fledgling in terms of it's only been around for the last couple of years, it'll grow in bigger and bigger popularity. But when they report on things, they report on what is the most popular at the time.
Well, it's also
they also drive the popularity as well. There is a bit of a double-edged sword there, Macca.
That's true, there
is a little bit, but I do agree with you. The fact is that at that time, the problem is that I have an issue with some of the what Channel 7 has done to the AFLW this year. And my issue is the fact that they actually don't pay for those rights. They are given the AFLW by the AFL. The AFL pays for that to actually go out on that main broadcast channel. The fact that, yes, whilst there was the Olympics going on, they pushed the AFLW onto 7Mate. The fact that once that finished, they still kept it on 7Mate and didn't put it back on the main channel, which is what they were given it for free. By the AFL, that pisses me off.
And Nikki, it's all about
purely because in order to get sponsors, you need to be on the main channel.
But it's all about the number of viewers as well, though, Nikki.
I don't want to get bogged into this conversation.
Say something a bit differently.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my main point is that I've really enjoyed AFLW. I think it's fantastic. I would hate for the sport to be hijacked because it has a captive male audience. I would hate for the sport to be hijacked by pseudo-feminists with an agenda. It will do such a disservice, and it would be, and I hope, and this is the problem that I have with the Western Bulldogs action, bringing sexism into this situation where everyone knows the rules, everyone knows the penalties. The penalties were negotiated with the players.
By the AFLPA, it was restrictive to the players, and the players kind of agreed with that. And I think Brendan's actually on the AFLPA, she's one of them big marquees. I got in an argument with O'Halloran from The Guardian about this, who was claiming, oh, yes, it is discrimination. And I'm just like, oh, I'm sorry, no. Female footy player, no, it's not. And the fact that she has form, it was the second time she did it, and one of the most dangerous things we have in the league, and I know this as a new female football player, is tackling incorrectly. We lose a lot of players to concussion. And you actually have a longer mandatory sit-out time, I don't know, in the SA of the SAFL than what you do in the AFL if you're concussed. Yeah. And watching that grand final, the Bulldogs players, once again, there was slam tackles going on, they were doing, and they weren't getting picked up for it. That team is notorious for it.
Anyway, we're at 1:28, so we better be quick. Go, Maka,
I'm going to give it to the Bulldogs for Beveridge and Gordon trying to pull this.
I do have one more. Maka, go on.
She just read my mind. I was going to say Beveridge and all things Bulldog.
Bulldogs for me, but a nice little whack too to Channel 7, who decided now that it's a good idea to interview the umpires. What the actual hell?
So not only
are they doing it at half time, but they're doing a special interview after the game. They had Razor Ray and bloody Humphrey Smith talking for about 5 minutes after the game and talking
Derek.
Yeah, I don't. You know,
what about Parnell?
What is going on when we decide that it is a good idea to interview umpires? What the actual F is going on when we decide that it's a good idea to profile umpires? They are there to officiate a game, and this I think it's a terrible idea.
Bit of drinking going on at their production meetings or something?
Anyway, look, I think that's probably going to have to do us. We're at 1:29, so apologies, people listening, if we've dragged this on, but hopefully it's been some lively and vigorous discussion that's been worth listening to.
Can I make one point before we go?
There's always more to talk about after a loss.
Look, we didn't slam Hardigan. I'm slamming Hardigan. That's all I want to say.
Okay. Look, thanks everyone for listening in. Of course, you can listen to this on demand via Spreaker, via Twitter, via Facebook, or on our website, also on TuneIn Radio. And look out on Tuesday night for Tuesday Night Live with Pete and the crew again, and we'll be talking about some of this in more details. Until then, thanks very much, guys. Thanks, Macca. Thanks, Nikki. We'll see you on Tuesday night.
Yeah,
not at all.